want to thank our sponsor, bedinabox.com. You guys know I did the Sleep Number commercial for the Super Bowl, but I can no longer sleep in that bed. It's a long, long story. So we got a new mattress. They have a 120-day risk-free trial. If you don't like the fucking bed, you send it right back. The code word is Ripper10. 10% off what already is the sale going on the site right now. So go to bedinabox.com, code word Ripper10, and go buy a fucking mattress. Missionary only, though. You're only allowed to bang missionary in the mattress. That's it.
Welcome to the future of sports betting with Atlas World Sports. Atlas World Sports is your super sports book on your phone. Find the latest lines in real time to give yourself every advantage to beat the house. Better action coming soon. Atlas World Sports will deliver a winning experience for all your rookie bettors all the way to Hall of Fame bettors with our AI-based Game Winners predictive model for subscribers. Find Atlas World Sports in iOS and Android app stores or via atlasworldsports.com. Atlas World Sports, may the odds forever be in your favor. Bet better.
All right, so here we are. We're on the River Magoo podcast. Once again, I brought in the boys, too. I brought in AJ from the Side Hustle podcast. I brought in LJ from Purple Banter. And Howie Mandel, do you know why I brought in these guys?
Backup. You need a backup?
They're just massive fans of you.
Massive fans.
They told me before, they're like, bro, we fucking love Howie Mandel. And the kind of way I roll.
So I'm feeling the love in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm the reason. Surrounded by it. So I know that. LJ and AJ, why don't you guys explain real quick why you're such big fans of Howie Mandel? Uh-oh. Let's build his confidence early.
Well, this man is like a national, international icon.
1,000.
You know, never been one guest that my mom and dad immediately get on FaceTime with me and they're like, you're going to Howie's studio. This is the craziest thing ever. Wow. Tell him this, ask him that.
Wow.
Chaos.
Yeah. Wow. When the parents, I always get that though. People will come up to me, go, are you Howie Mandel? And yeah. I go, yeah. And then they go, my grandmother loves you.
Yeah, but that's the difference, Howie, because when you fuck with us, we have a very young audience too. And I know all the young people fuck with you too, because when I post you on my thing, everybody still loves you. Yeah, like from top to bot.
Thank you for the love.
And I think there's one other person that may outwork you. It might be Shaquille O'Neal.
I love Shaquille
O'Neal. Isn't he the best?
I think he is. I think he is.
He takes on everything.
He does. And he has usurped just sports. You know, there's so many athletes that, you know, you get a great audience from your, you know, your fans and your sportsmanship. But I think Shaquille has, you know, gotten even the kids who never watched the NBA he's really a funny guy. Did you get to talk to him?
Shaq and I have been very good friends. Shaq's actually gone out of his way to, you know, during certain times of my life to reach out and, you know, check in and do some things. Shaq's just an all around amazing guy. But I'm saying you do everything. What's your big baby right now? What are you working on? What are you most excited about that you do in your life right now?
Guesting on a podcast.
There you go.
The truth of the matter.
Say it again.
This is it. Ripper Magoo. Yeah. Ripper Magoo is what I'm doing right now. But you know what? That is the truth. And the truth and the reason I'm going to tell you this, and I'm not just kissing your ass, is because I just need to constantly be doing something. You know, everybody says you work so hard, you're doing everything, you know, you're doing so many things. What do you do in your spare time? Well, first of all, I hate spare time.
Same.
I'm not good in my own head. Quiet time is not good. I barely sleep. I don't go to bed till I'm going to fall over. And so if I have something to do, that is the thing that I'm most excited about. And that informs everything that I do, even though people may know me from AGT, that doesn't take up a lot of time. You know, I've already recorded the entire season except for the live shows. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going back to work there till August. Mm-hmm. I just finished CGT, which is Canada's Got Talent, and that's finished. And so if I can be a guest, when you call me up and said, hey, will you want to do my podcast? I went, yes. So this is the most exciting thing. I do my own podcast, Howie Mandel Does Stuff With My Daughter, which you were a great guest on.
Thank you so much.
Check that out.
I'm worried about you getting canceled on that show. I mean, we talked about some crazy things. That's what I love about Howie. And I think that like what's great is there is a fine line. And I'm curious about, because I always like to talk about cancel culture and all that stuff. But I think you do have a little bit of leeway when it comes to being labeled as a comedian, correct?
If you no, well, yes and no. I think if you're grandfathered in as somebody who can push, you know, if you, I don't know if you're familiar with like people like Shane Gillis and Bert Kreischer, and
we just did Bert. We just sat over Bert yesterday.
I love Bert, you know, and these people who are putting their, you know, and Joe Rogan and people like that who are the new face of comedy today. You know, when I got into comedy, I got into comedy in the mid 70s, and Richard Pryor is my God. I loved him. And that's when pushing the boundaries was what comedy was about. And even if you weren't a comedian, if you did something that was kind of off color or people were offended by, if you said to them, I was just joking. So joking was okay. And then that became a sin. And I have a lot of friends who were canceled, who lost their jobs, who, you know, lost their careers, and who, you know, are walking that tightrope that is very scary.
But it's also scary for me. Is that part of the game, though? Is that part of the comedian game, is to push it as far as you can?
If that's what you do right now, I think I am in a precarious situation because I have, and love it, you know, I've decided to, you know, take part in, you know, broadcast television. I'm doing America's Got Talent, which is the number one family television. And it is ads.
Great.
but it's ad supported, you know. Big brands, and they're there. And I think if I'm responsible, and I don't cross the line on that show, and I don't cross the line, and I'm not a comedian on that show. I'm a judge on that show. And I hope that I can inspire people and give them really good input. But if I'm doing my podcast, or I'm someplace else, or if I'm in a club or a theater doing stand up, I always tell people, don't, you know, you can check out, I still do it. Don't bring the kids. You're not going to see the Deal or No Deal guy, and you're not going to see the America's Got Talent guy. And that's not where I started. You know, I started as a stand up comic, and stand up comedy is what that's the one thing that I never leave. I don't do as much of it on television anymore. All the stuff I do on television is kind of family friendly, but if you come to the club because you're a big fan of America's Got Talent, you will be shocked. But I was also shocked, and it's kind of like, I don't know if you were familiar with Bob Saget's act.
Oh. Of course I was. Okay. Yeah, he was doing what was it? What was the show?
I mean,
Full House.
Yeah. Full House.
Full House, the everyday dad. And then talk about,
but he was not that guy off air, right?
Right. And he wasn't that guy before. And me and Bob Saget came up at the same time, and we came up from clubs, and I was just, I wouldn't say I was dirty or even controversial. I was just, I kind of don't edit myself. And that's what I love about the clubs. That's what I love about stand-up comedy. That was the one place where I had the freedom to not hit a mark, to not recite a line that was written for me, to not throw to a commercial. And if something off color came off the top of my head in the moment, I would let that happen. That was happening. I was also at the same time doing weird voices. I did the Bobby voice in my act, and the material that I did with Bobby was actually filthy nightclub material, because he was a baby that would say all these terrible things, yeah, like where babies come from. But I would give details.
Can you still do it, Howie?
Yeah. I can talk like that.
And I used to do that.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. He's saying sorry because if you're just listening, he touched me. I'm okay with being touched. It's hand to hand. I don't like hand on hand.
I'm clean. I did have, there was one girl that I helped last night. It was a little sketchy. We're good. I promise you.
So, but I, you know, and I used to talk about how, you know,
where babies come from.
And I used to say,
the man puts his penis in the vagina.
And then I used to, and it used to get dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. So when I got asked to do a Saturday morning cartoon, I went, what the fuck? Are you crazy? How do I do a Saturday morning cartoon?
Yeah.
And my friends and me, they came from Second City. They had a development deal at Fox. They said, well, you'll do Bobby and we'll just write. We didn't know how to write for Saturday morning. We wrote real things that happened to us when we were kids, things that happened to them when they were kids. And it became an Emmy winning Happy Meal Bobby. And it was not only Bobby, that was the one voice I got so many jobs from that voice.
That's what it is too. I ask everybody is like, you know, I ask it on every podcast is basically, when was the moment where you said that, you know what? I fucking made it.
April 17th, 1977. I was at Yuck Yucks, which is a comedy club in Toronto, Canada. And I had a, you know, I come from a really good family and a good upbringing, but you know, I have mental health issues, and I was an undiagnosed, I had undiagnosed depression, anxiety, OCD. I'm not an athlete. I was 4'11" and in high school, 4'11" and 89 pounds. I tried to meet girls. I joined the wrestling team. That was the only team I can get on for somebody who's a germaphobe. Yeah. Now I'm in a onesie rolling around with another sweaty guy. Nothing was working out for me. There seemed to be the beginning of this comedy boom in every city, Boston being one of the main ones. Started opening up these comedy clubs. And I went one night, April 17th, 1977, and I saw the show. I'd never seen stand-up live. And it was kind of electric and great to see somebody, young guy like me, on stage, edgy, funny, in the moment. Everybody's roaring. And it's just a good thing. And then Mark Breslin, who was the host, said, does anybody want to get up and try this? And we'll at midnight on Mondays, we'll do an amateur night. And somebody that I was sitting there said, you should do it. And I went, okay, because I always say, okay, I just always do. I don't say no to anything because I'm so afraid that I'll miss out. So I said, okay. And didn't prepare, didn't think about any ramifications, didn't want to be a comedian, didn't think about show business, but I thought it might be funny if somebody goes, ladies and gentlemen, Howie Mandel, and then I walk out on stage, because there's no fucking reason for Howie Mandel to be on stage. I was selling carpet.
Right.
You know, so he went, ladies and gentlemen, Howie Mandel. And I went, and I just stood there, and they applauded. I don't know why they applauded, just because I,
That's the moment, though, that you, I don't think, that's
no, not
the
yet. You made it. No. But I got to, let me finish. When the applause died down, I got like horrified, because what the fuck am I going to do? Yeah. You're looking, there's a spotlight in my face. There's a microphone at my mouth, and there's people staring up at me going, what the fuck are you going to do? I just got terrified. And if you go to YouTube and you watch any of these old tapes of me, I was a very different, it was just terror. And I tried to think of something, and I would start going, okay. And they started laughing at me being like you're doing right now. At me being terrified. And I'd go, what? No, tell me. Okay, what? And I put my hands in my pocket, and because I have OCD, I carry rubber gloves with me even then. And I was carrying rubber gloves so that if I had to go to a public restroom, I didn't have to touch anything. And I go, okay. And I pull out the rubber glove, and I take the rubber glove and I pulled it over my head.
Right.
I don't know why. I was just terrified. And I started breathing with my nose, and the fingers were going up and down. They started laughing even more. So I blew it and it popped off my head, and they roared, and I went, good night. And I walked off the stage, and the guy went, that was great. You got to come back tomorrow. And I went, what for what? He goes, do it again. And I go, do what? He goes, do what the fuck you did. And it was the first time as I came down from that moment, I realized, you know, a group of 150 people like enjoyed me.
Yeah.
I've never been enjoyed.
Yeah.
I was the most unpopular kid. I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't have any skills. And they liked me for just being, I was just terrified.
Do you think you not had a lot of friends because I want to talk, I really do, because everybody knows you for who you are. But one of the things you constantly hear is the whole germaphobe thing. So where does that start?
Oh, I can't remember not being a germaphobe. So I was a germaphobe who, when I was in kindergarten, and did it unplug?
Yeah, we're good.
No, not there. Underneath.
Underneath?
Yeah. There, it's hanging from the tape.
Right.
You see it?
Oh, beautiful. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right, go on there.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, sorry, apologies.
It's okay. I do my own tech stuff
too. I was going to say, you're a jack of all trades.
Yeah, I really am. So Ever since Radio Shack closed, all the germaphobe stuff started when? I can't remember a time without it, but I remember, how old are you when you learned to tie your shoes? So I learned to tie my shoes. I was like 5 or 6 years old. I learned to tie my shoes, but my my shoes would come undone at school. And then I was cognizant of the fact that they touched the laces touched the ground.
Okay.
So now I didn't want to touch them anymore. So I wouldn't re-tie my shoes. So I would tell everybody, go tie your shoes. And I would say, I don't know how to, because that was easier to say. Then I don't want to touch the laces. So I would tell everybody to not, everybody would make fun of me because I was the only one in class that didn't know how to tie my shoe. And then my shoes would be loose and they would be falling off. So I'd have to walk with a, like this weird limp just to keep my shoes on.
Do you think that had, when you say you had no, like a lot of friends growing up, you think that had something to do with it?
everything about me. I was just really, and I think we all are, I was really uncomfortable. And I'm old, you know, I wasn't old as a kid, but I mean, when I was a kid, this was not a time when you would talk
accepted,
about,
right?
Well, you wouldn't talk about therapy. Yeah. You wouldn't talk about being uncomfortable. You wouldn't talk about being afraid to touch things.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be afraid, you know, so I was afraid of things. I was different. I'll tell you, comedy, I didn't realize this till after, the way comedy came into my life is my parents loved comedy, really good parents, and they loved comedy, and my dad would buy comedy albums, and I'd hear my mom and dad laughing in the living room at these comedy albums. So I'd go out, because if you hear people laughing, and you don't have to know anything to know that that's a good place to be.
Right.
I want to be part of wherever this good feeling is. And I would go there and I'd listen to the albums with them, and I didn't know what the fuck they were laughing at. Like, nothing. When you're 4 years old and a guy's making a joke about a mother-in-law, I don't even know what a mother-in-law is. I've never even heard that term. So I felt like I was so out of it, even in my own house. They're all laughing and I don't know what the fuck they're laughing at. The first memory I have of being aware was I watched the show called Candid Camera, which is the first punked, the first prank show that ever existed. It came from radio, but then it started on TV, and it was a big show on Sunday nights. And I sat down, my parents were watching it, and I sat down with them. I must have been about 5 or 6 years old. And the host of it, whose name was Alan Funt, explained that he was going to pretend that he owned this office and that he was hiring this receptionist to answer the phone. And he told her that she has to answer the phone and you can't miss a call. I'm going out for lunch and you cannot miss one call. It's imperative that you take every message. And she was like, very like, this is the 50s. This is in the 1950s.
The what?
Wow.
And 1950s.
How old are you in the 1950s?
Young,
like 10?
I was born in 55, so I was probably about 5 years
talk
old.
About a different fucking time.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, no social media.
No color TV. This isn't black and white. This isn't black and white.
Right.
I'm telling you how old I am.
No, you.
I'm almost 70.
I know, but you look great.
Thank you.
Like no, whatever. Thank you. Has times? That's what I want to know too. Like the difference between being a comedian back then. Right. And now
I wasn't a comedian in the 50s. I started in the 70s.
I know you were a comedian in the 50s. I get it. But in the 70s, for instance, right?
Right.
There's no social media, right? So nobody gave a fuck about anybody recording things or anybody fucking like, because there was no, the only danger that would happen is probably you say something dumb and the locals might talk about you.
Not even that. You knew that the Comedy Store, I watched Richard Pryor put together live on the Sunset Strip. You know, that's one of the most seminal. There wouldn't be a Chappelle today or Eddie Murphy if he didn't make this. That was made in, if you haven't watched it, you got to watch it. But he was the king. He was the first comic that I was aware of that actually talked about, he was so authentic, even though he was hysterically funny, it was all real. You know, he was raised in a brothel. He had drug problems. He had relationship problems. And he would bring that and do those characters on stage.
Because he was the first rock star comic that would even talk about like cocaine and drug use, right?
Right.
And everybody else is shock and awe.
It was shock and awe. And, you know, if you listen to Rodney, I'm talking about other people of that time, Rodney Dangerfield had jokes.
Buttoned up.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, Bill Cosby, George Carlin did the hippy dippy weatherman. You know, they did bits.
Bill Cosby was one who kind of just. I'm not just saying.
He's so great.
Were you close to Bill Cosby?
No.
Oh, all right.
No.
Nobody these days ever knew him. And everyone's like, no, I never knew him.
Cosby it. Late at night.
No, I would get him as dates. That's it.
No. He was so beloved by everybody. I mean, that came out of nowhere. When you heard that Bill Cosby went down.
He was America's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was America's dad.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. People shouldn't rape.
I guess, yeah. I mean,
that's
definitely something.
The golden rule.
You got to draw the line there, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, I think you should draw the line before that. I think you should.
There's not that many rules, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
Is Bill Cosby still in prison?
No.
No, he's going on tour.
What?
He's about to go on tour.
But I don't think he can see or anything anymore, right?
It doesn't matter. He's going on tour, and I bet you he ends up doing well. This is a fucked up country.
Oh, he could still do arenas.
Yeah.
That's just, the Lord, when you have.
He's out of prison. He got out of prison. And there's another woman that came forward that did it, you know. But my point was that I saw this prank show. And it made us laugh because I understood that every time she went to answer the phone, they would pull a rope and the whole desk would go away and you'd see her. And she was so fucking shocked that the desk would go away. And we laughed. It was like a surprise party. I went, oh my God. And me and my mom and my dad laughed. I go, I got to do this. But I wasn't sophisticated enough. I knew I wanted to get laughs, but I wasn't sophisticated enough to know, number one, I don't have a TV show. Number two, I don't even have a friend that I can share. Like, it'd be fun to go, Bob, I'm going to walk into the room. I'm going to talk gibberish. You act like you understand what I'm saying and watch how they react. At least you need a cohort.
Like bits?
I had nothing. Right. So I would go to school and I would hire a company I'd call in the Yellow Pages, a construction company. And I'd say, we need a bid on an addition onto the library on the west side in the field, knowing that I was in math class, and I'd see this guy out there measuring and he'd have all these other things. And the principal would go out and say, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm going to give a bid on the addition. They go, who authorized this? And I'd give my name, Howie Mandel, which I thought was really funny. And I'd get called to the office, but I didn't tell anybody. So nobody knew I was doing this. So I just came off like insane.
Yeah, crazy.
I this is way before Caddyshack. I didn't want to go swimming and I thought it was funny. I took a chocolate bar with nuts in it and I bent it a little bit and I threw it in the pool. So it looked like somebody took a shit in the pool.
You're producing your own show.
Nope, but it's not. But the point is, if I did and it said if I told one other person I threw a chocolate bar in the pool, it's going to look like shit, that would be funny. What I did was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Do you think that's because it's obsession to make people laugh?
No, I was just making me laugh. I was just, I want to do like, without thinking it through, I said, I want to be like Candid Camera. It was fun. I just thought about making me laugh. It's kind of funny that everybody thinks that somebody took a shit in the pool. 300 people show up at the end of the day to look at the shit in the bottom of the pool. When they're all there, I dive in and come up with it in my mouth, which I did. But here's the thing. I didn't have a friend. Yeah. The whole, in unison, 300 people went, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And I was the grossest, most hated pariah in the school for diving in and eating shit. And nobody believed me that it was a chocolate bar or that I did it.
Yeah.
So every girl thought I was gross, thought I was immature. Every guy thought I was disgusting. I didn't have, and I didn't understand that I needed an audience, that I needed a show, that I needed a friend to share it with. These are all funny stories right now, but in the moment, it was horrific.
It is so messed up because I would do dumb stuff like that in middle school and high school, right? But you would do it for your boys.
I didn't have the
boys. Then after things felt to get weird, you'd be like, well, this was for my team, my group. And you're just like, no, is just internalized.
But even my stand-up comedy on that first night, I started going, I was just terrified. I wasn't trying to make you laugh. I was going, okay, all right. Well, I don't know what to do. And I just pulled the glove over my head. I was in my own little world and they started laughing and it popped off. And, there's a saying as a comedian, if you could just make one person laugh, you're doing your job. It's always just me.
It's the same thing as this is why I think I get some chicks because I'm not that I don't think I'm that attractive, but at the same time, do you think it's true that if you can make a girl laugh, you can make her do anything?
No.
What?
No, it depends what she's laughing at.
No, if you make a girl.
If you pull down your fly and it's a and she starts laughing. I always heard girls say, I want a guy with a good sense of humor. I don't know, I'm old again, but I was at the circus a couple times and I never heard any females going, I wonder if I can meet the clown.
Yeah. Right.
They never wanted. They want to meet the ringmaster.
Yeah.
I don't think they want the clown. I think it's nice to think you want a guy with a good sense of humor, but a sense of humor is
fucked then.
Well,
women like the women like guys know. With
you,
wit.
You're here with what?
Women like guys like with wit, but they don't like the clown. Those are two different types of things.
I don't even know that. I don't know that most people, I think you have to put it into perspective. A sense of humor is a very particular thing.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's a sense. And most humor is derived from negativity. If you watch Back to the Circus, if you watch a clown fall down and the kids laugh, you're laughing at the disadvantage of somebody that you don't know. They fell down.
Correct.
If you tell a joke, two guys walked into a bar, if nothing happens, nothing horrible happens to one of them, then it's not a joke. So all humor comes out of negative. It's got to be fucked up. Somebody's got to get fucked up. Something bad, something awkward, something weird has to happen. That's why when you look in theater, they have tragedy and comedy together. Those two masks. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The reason is because they're very close. So most people don't have that sensibility. I don't think most people do. And that's why you have to say to them, you want to hear a joke? Do you want to hear, or this is so funny?
Right.
You have to preface it by telling them that to find it. And there's no such thing in real comedy. There's no such thing as too soon.
Right.
In that moment, if you could find the humor in that dark moment, that's great comedy.
Because it's because some of the best comedy.
9/11 is like something that, you know, I think that some people got canceled for going too soon, though.
Well, one of my favorite comedians of all time was Gilbert Gottfried.
Okay.
You know who he is?
Yep. I know Gilbert Gottfried. Yeah.
Okay. Iago from Aladdin.
Yeah, but one of his best jokes is one of the first comedy shows right after 9/11 was right after 9/11. He was doing, I think it was the roast, the Playboy Hugh Hefner roast. And it's world famous. His joke was he couldn't get a direct flight LA without a stop at the Twin Towers. But that was within 3 days, but it's within the comedy community. He is the comic's comic. He is brilliant.
That's the line.
But Howie, don't they say that most comics, like, it ties into something that's a little off from comedians? Like, it's
the most comedians are off.
A little bit off.
It is different to have that sensibility to find the humor in the dark place. But I got to tell you something, as somebody who kind of deals with mental health all my life, humor and laughter is my panacea, is the only thing that got me through. And at my darkest moments in my life, when I lost my father, it was a real hard time. I have never laughed so hard in my life. In those moments, I found ways to make myself laugh. And if I didn't find ways to make myself laugh, I don't know that I would have been able to survive it. But what's good for the goose is not necessarily good for the gander. Some people need whatever you need to get through. They need to feel sorrow and serious and down. I need to find that brightness or that light.
Yeah.
I always need to find
it. So to segue a little bit away from 9/11, who was the banker in Deal or No Deal?
Well, the truth is that the banker was a guy. It was a real guy. But I have, and you can see, and you should put it up. You know who? We had guest bankers. And one of the most well-known guest bankers was a guy that you interviewed. It was Donald Trump.
Oh, no way.
Was a guest banker.
They never revealed his identity?
They revealed him. They had guest bankers. I'll show you.
But the guy that was always behind the screen that was in the black.
Yeah. So that guy was really funny. I can't remember his real name. And what was real funny, there was a guy who was a shadow and he got paid. He was there at every show. And that's like 11
bucks an hour or something like that.
But he would.
What did you say? 11 bucks an hour. What did he make?
I don't know what he made. He had to make at least scale. So whatever scale.
Donald Trump at the time?
No. Well, yeah,
Donald Trump made $11 an hour. That's
the banker behind the screen.
This is when, NBC was also, doing The Apprentice. So it was a cross promotion, but I'll show you.
Yeah.
That's going to be a funny big gig, being the banker and trying to like sell people. I'm like, yo, I'm the banker. Like,
how are the numbers?
No, well, that's what I was going to tell you. So he was a single guy and he would be at Deal or No Deal was the biggest show on television. And he would go to bars and tell girls, you know, Deal or No Deal, I'm the banker. And he'd go,
sure,
and they would say, turn out the lights. And he'd try to get it like they turn on the light in the men's room and turn out the lights in the room. He'd go, he's always trying to get silhouette. People to recognize his silhouette.
Yeah. What was, while you find that, are you open to sharing like what you made in that show?
Yeah, not huge money. I ended up, I'll tell you something. So they got me, I showed you in 2005, for a comedian to do a game show was not a good career move. Just like there was a time when movie stars wouldn't do commercials.
Yeah, you get pigeonholed. Like
and when you're a comedian, the game show host was kind of like the punchline, you know? And it was just a guy who wore a suit and read trivia questions off cards. So in 2005, I was about to leave my entire career. I was my entire show business career. I was telling you, I'm involved in other things and I'm involved in real estate. And I had gone from being able to sell like 10,000 seats and doing a series like Bobby's World and St. Elsewhere to maybe selling, 100 seats in a club and traveling. So I said, I'm out of here. And then I got a call from my manager who said, you know, they want you to do a game show. And I went, no fucking way. And I hung up the phone. And then he calls me back and he goes, no, this will be good. This is NBC wants to do it 5 nights a week.
Wow.
And in prime time, which they've never done. And before me, the only comedians that went, the real comedians, I mean, Millionaire was already huge, but the only comedians
that was Regis Philbin.
Regis Philbin, not a comedian, but had done a game show, was Groucho Marx, had done You Bet Your Life in the 50s, where I spoke of earlier. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I went, no fucking way. And then the third time he called me back, he goes, this is a huge hit all over the world. Just look at it. I'll look at it. I'm at a deli in the valley in Los Angeles. I'm not going into a meeting. If they want to come and show me what the fucking game is, come and show me. And a guy by the name of Rob Smith from End Them All came to the deli, moved my soup, and put that piece of cardboard that I showed you.
Oh, wow.
I just saw you. And it wasn't even, it looked like an 8-year-old had an after school project. He cut out these fake little cases.
Yeah.
There was no straight lines on the piece of cardboard. I thought, now for sure, I got it. I'm being punked. I'm on the show punked.
Yeah.
Because were you a cultural icon at that moment?
No.
When they were trying to pluck you off? Okay.
No, I was trying to, I'm trying to show
that
you.
That show is fucking, how many seasons ago?
It went 4 seasons in prime time, and then we did 2 seasons and syndicated. And then 2 years ago, I did it on CNBC, and it's coming back now. Deal or No Deal Island.
With who?
I don't know yet. I'm producing it, and it's going to be on an island where, like, I think of a Survivor, where people, there's 100 cases buried.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then whatever they can find, we'll play Deal or No Deal and they'll win that money, but way off on a deserted island.
How did the money work? The money. So what was the biggest win on there?
Million.
Anybody won a million?
Yeah.
So when you win $1 million, what do? They take you in the back room, and what's the process?
Spanking. No, when you win $1 million, I think it was paid out in increments. You know, what do you call it when you don't get everything at once? It's not like the lottery.
Yeah, it's not the lump sum. No,
it's not the lump sum. So they'll pay you
payments or
installments.
Installments.
Yeah.
And it's half of a mil, right? Because it's probably taxed right away, right?
You get less. No, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. More people. It was amazing to me how people gamble. Whereas somebody came to me, let me finish the story, cause you'll understand how I got it. But he showed me it, and my wife said, take the deal. Cause she wanted me out of the house. And I wasn't that busy at the time. So I went and did it, and I called them and I said, when does it go? This was a Friday. They said, it goes on Monday. I go, Monday? You said I was your number one choice. They go, we need you. I go, well, don't you have to build a set? They go, we built a set. I go, don't you need to hire the models? They go, we've hired the models. So how fucking low was I on the rungs to be? How many people said no before this is going in 2 days? And then I said to them, can I hire comedians to write for me? And they let me hire comedians, and I was going to be really funny. I had all this shit planned. And then I went on the set and I saw the first person. I brought her down, Karen Van. And I said, tell me about yourself. And she was the first person. She told me she's a single mother. She has never owned a home. She has 3 kids. She's never had insurance, health insurance. And then I realized this is real. And I didn't want to fuck around. I didn't want to do my comedy because I wanted her to, that's how I ended up talking. Like, I talked to my kids.
But your goal though is to kind of be, and did the producers ever get in your ear? Because at the end of the day, I think good TV is when they gamble.
Just by virtue of being there, and there was a chance, like I would say, okay, the first offer, you've opened up 4 cases. The first offer is, you know, $30,000. She'd go, no deal, without even thinking. And I'd go, are you fucking crazy? You live someplace in Iowa. $30,000 will not only buy you health insurance, it's more than a down payment on a house. That's why I would say, you know, I would say, listen to me, Karen. You have, if you say no deal, you have 6 more cases to open. Right now, your offer is $50,000. $50,000 is probably 10 times more money than you have in the bank right now. It's probably double than more than you make a year. It'll buy you health insurance. It'll buy you that house you want. Or do you open up 5 more cases and believe there's $1 million in your case?
Now, is that coming from your heart?
Yes.
So that's coming from your heart.
That's some of the best bits when he is begging people, please don't do this.
I mean, you were so good. I'll tell you how
it was awesome. Hard.
I'll tell you this. You are, I'd put you up there as the best game show host of all time.
Well, thank you.
I will. Hey, Bob, but do you believe as a gambler, do you believe that you got to bet big to win big though?
It depends on the situation and where you're at. But I think when you're, you know, there's a lot of outside elements that probably, you know, come into effect.
Well, here's what came into effect. Here's what I learned. You're a gambler. I'm not. Here's what.
Not anymore. I had to shut that down.
Well, but the thing is that, you know, there's something called house money. So when I offered them $20,000 or $30,000, they said, so many people said this over and over. I came with nothing. So what do I have to lose?
It's not my money that I'm
losing 30 grand.
And me saying, well, it was just me saying 30 grand, which is real.
Yes.
Which did get paid out in full at the.
There had to be a certain tier where they break it down.
What do you mean?
I'm assuming if it's like a million, it's different. If it's 20, they could probably pay it out one sum.
Right. So, but when I said, you know, you're going to have to open four more cases. The offer is, and if you stay, if the cases have low amounts in them, the next offer is going to be double. Like if you don't open up the million. So deal or no deal. As somebody who's not a gambler, if the first offer to me was $10,000, I stood there for 3 minutes. I'm taking 10 fucking grand, a bird in the hand. And so many of these people and you realize this is why people are where they are supposed to be. You know, financially, this is how they think. Yeah. So I would say $30,000 and they'd say no deal. And for me, that ripped a hole in my heart. You would just threw away $30,000 cash for, and they got mad at me, the producers. I said for a chance at a million.
Because so, they want to push. They want you to fucking, you're up for a million, you lose, you get zero. They want that.
It's like Vegas TV. In a sense, right? Vegas doesn't want you to walk away with money. Vegas wants you to continue
right,
to gamble,
100%.
Right?
But I'm saying like, what would you say is the most heartbreaking, gut-wrenching, there he is. But he's there. You can see him, right?
Yeah, but he was up there and they knew it was him. That's me and
Donald
Trump nice. On Deal or No Deal.
Wow.
Yes.
Did he calculate and crunch the numbers?
Yeah, he kind of did. He said, like, what are the odds? You should take this. I think the person that was there did not win a lot of money. That Karen Van, that
Donald
first one.
Got the best of him.
Karen Van walked away. The very first person walked away with $5,000. I think at some point in the show, she was offered $60,000-$70,000 and walked away with $5,000. She was excited. Wow. I mean, we brought her back years later because we did like recaps on people, you know, people who won a million, people who won 700,000. Yeah. What did she do with her $5,000? She bought tits.
Yeah. Beautiful. Great investment.
She made a mountain out of a molehill.
What was the most gut-wrenching loss that you saw that you actually really felt? What contestant and what was the
it was a guy, I'm trying to remember his name, but he left with a penny. He left with, well, you know, here's the thing, oh, you know, crap. Some people are left. It sometimes came down to this.
Do you pay him the penny?
In increments.
Yeah. And California still taxes you on that.
Yeah. But here's the thing, you know, what do you do? So there were so many opportunities. You're a gambler much more than I am.
I'm not anymore, Howie. I quit.
Okay. But this is what it would be. There'd be two cases left, right? So there's two cases. You opened up every case. You took every offer. You know, there's a $5 case left unopened and $1 million case.
That actually happened?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Left unopened.
The offer's like
$300,000. Yeah. What do you do?
Would I do
deal
there?
Or no deal?
Oh, I love this. I'm taking deal. See you later.
So there's a lot of people that go, I came with nothing. The 300,000, I've got a 50-50 shot at $1 million. That but you also have a 50-50 shot of $5.
That was the coolest moment I've ever had maybe in my life was when Howie just looked at me and just said deal or no deal. That was the coolest fucking moment
of my life. It was so hard for me to look in these people's eyes and you could see they're going, or they know they're going to take $300,000 and then they go, and then somebody in the audience or they bring like family members or the wife goes, go for it.
Yeah.
You know, and they go, 300,000, we can buy our house, but $1 million is three times
bad
more.
Influence is all
three
around
times
you.
More bad influence. And they'd go, really? And that is your grandmother's favorite number. So go for it. There's no way it's not in there. Really? Right before she died, she said case number 14. Right. Really? And then, so he goes, no deal. And then we open up their case and they have the $5. Mm. And then I always thought the show was in the car ride home. How do you deal with this? Yeah. I would imagine marriages were ending and relationships were finished. And
the cool thing was I think what drew a lot of people to show what you guys did well was obviously, I think that always attractive women sell. And I think that you guys had some beautiful models up there. Who was one of the most famous models that you guys had or became? Something?
The Duchess.
Meghan Markle.
Meghan Markle was a model on the show.
What?
Yes. Meghan Markle was a model on the show. Didn't know that until she became the Duchess and talked about it.
Do you get residuals from
Harry.
The queen?
Yeah. Do you think Harry just was that Harry, fan of the show?
Harry was a big fan of the show. Chrissy Teigen was a model on the show.
Wow.
I think Hillary Clinton was.
She was
much younger.
Yeah, her case was hopefully taken away right away.
One of Nick Cannon's baby mamas. Well, that's an easy bet.
You can fill up all 30 cases.
Every third woman in LA is a baby mama too.
So it was all real though. Like the game was never fixed.
Can't be fixed. And not only was it not fixed, you know, the cases were randomly packed by a third party, somebody who's not a producer. So the producers, me, the host, the girls don't know what's in their case. When they randomized those cases, the 26 models would go collect the cases in a back room somewhere. They'd go collect the cases. And as they're walking to the set, if one of them tripped and just even the latch opened a little bit, but nobody saw what was inside, we were shut down for an hour.
Yeah.
They would take the 26 cases.
So they could never be like, hey, I gotta go to the bathroom real quick and then wink at the contestant or anything.
They don't know.
There could have been some inside jobs though.
They don't know.
All right.
It was actually funny.
The movie Game Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's based on, that's why there's a third party because of Game Show.
Yeah.
Because of that, fixing. Mm-hmm. No game show ever. It's like Fort Knox. You can't get backstage. You can't know what's happening. You can't, but it was funny. It was fun. You know, the girls were, I remember like in the first days of the girls, they didn't understand, sometimes they didn't understand, it took a minute to get into the game. So what would happen is like, sometimes they'd open a case. They'd say, the contestant would say seven. You understand the game. The game is you pick the case. You hope that you have the million. The way we show you whether you have the million or not is by opening up other cases. As long as you don't open up the million, the chances of you holding the million grow.
Has anyone ever won the million?
Yeah.
I watched the show, but I'm trying to remember.
Those are some of the best like old YouTubes to watch. It's just people like open up the millions. It's awesome.
But what would happen sometimes is the girls would get confused because they'd pick a case number seven, and case number seven would open it up and there'd be a million. They'd have the $1 million. Yeah. And they'd go, yay. And I'd go, no, not yay. If you have the million, they've ruined it. So don't say yay. Yeah. But the camaraderie between the girls was really funny. Really funny. Like I remember in like season four, they hired a girl who she was gorgeous. She didn't speak English. She was Spanish. I think she was from Spain. I mean, she understood a little bit of English, but not really. And the moments, you know, I would go, we're going to open your case when we come back. Remember how you did that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That was the biggest cliffhanger there was.
Well, one of those, the reason for the cliffhanger is because not all of them were mic'd. So, if they picked a case and this was a pivotal part of the show, we would go to commercial and then they would put a mic on that girl. And that would be a great opportunity for that person to
get a little airtime.
Get some airtime and maybe say something inspirational, you know, like it just seems I'm looking at your family and your great mother, and I just wish you nothing but the best. And I hope it changes your life. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed. And then they open the case, right? Whatever they say. So it just so happens there's a pivotal part of the show, and this gorgeous Spanish woman is the case that is going to be open, and we go to commercial, and beside her, I'll never forget. I remember it's Tamika Jacobs. It was number 21. She was beside her. She's a very funny girl, mm-hmm. Tamika. She's on Instagram, I think now, but anyway, Tamika says to the girl goes, What do I say? There's a lot of pressure, you know, there's big network TV. And they're making her, and Tamika says something like, I'm paraphrasing, but it was like that. She says, right before you open the case, you say, to the dogs, a tree, number four, and swimming. She goes, what does this mean? He goes, this is the way in America. This is the way we say that we wish you the best of luck and we want you to win.
What?
Do the tree swimming, number four, dog? Yes, yes. Do the tree swimming, number four, dog. Okay. We come back. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We are rolling. Okay. Before we left, I don't remember the girl's name, but before we left, he picked Tanya's case. It all comes down to here. The last offer was $300,000. It's all going to come down to here. Will he be a millionaire or will he walk away with nothing? Tanya, before you open your case, is there anything you want to say to John? She says, see, the tree, number four, we must go swimming, and it's a dog.
What?
And the whole audience, you just see, I looked around and I looked like maybe I didn't hear it right.
And it's just crickets in there at that point.
It's just crickets. And John, who's got sweat coming down his face, like he's on the precipice of his life changing forever. And I could see like Tamika just biting her lip and the other women are just biting because they know they fucked her up. They, you know. And I said, pardon me? She goes, the tree... boats and
you made her say it again, Howie?
But because I thought I just didn't understand. I didn't know that they were fucking with her. I thought maybe
Howie knew what he was doing.
These are your sick like childhood jokes coming back. You're like running. Yeah.
I go, that doesn't. What does that mean? And I said, what does that mean? And she says, in your country, is good luck. And I go, what do you mean?
You kept grilling her.
Oh, because I won't let her go. I didn't. Until they finally went, cut.
Really?
Oh, they went cut.
You gotta
run
it back.
What the fuck did they do to her? What did they do? And they went up and Tamika got yelled at. It was so funny. Oh, no. We were all laughing. And they.
Oh,
got,
my
and
God. That's
I great. Think there was a rivalry. Because the reason I remember that story is because that girl, that woman, came up to me maybe 3 weeks ago and goes, you remember me? And yeah. I went, yes.
Yeah.
The dog, the tree.
That's a great fucking story.
Yeah, it's a great story that I don't think I've
was
ever
it,
told
was
before.
Was it competitive amongst the girls?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But it was just so much fun. They would fuck with each other and do things. But
it was a fucking amazing show. You did you have America's Got Talent.
Yes, I do.
Who are the three that are with you on the panel right now?
Heidi Klum.
Yeah.
Sofia Vergara.
Oh.
And the gorgeous Simon Cowell.
Yep. He's brutal, huh?
I think he's kind of softened up as he's had kids and gotten older. They kind of, I'm getting the reputation for being brutal. And I don't think I'm brutal, but I think I'm honest. And what I have found is, and probably it seems brutal just because I think that Simon Cowell, besides being the creator of that show, created it was never seen on American TV before, on American Idol, where he was, you know, he was hired as a record producer. He is a record producer. And they told him just to do what he would do. And if I would imagine, I'm not in the music business, but in the music business, these people have gone in, they've gone into clubs and they've auditioned for him. And he has said, you know, you sound like a cat that just got run over. Yeah. And he was always like that. You should look for another.
Which actually though made great TV.
It did.
It made great TV.
And it also kind of made us aware that not only did it make great TV, but if you're just being nice, just to be nice, and you go, that was amazing.
You're not getting the best.
I was, not only that, I felt like I was getting, at the beginning, it was hard for me to be honest. And when I wasn't honest, I was getting killed online. Really? You thought there wasn't one note that person hit and you're going, you got to go for it.
You got
to. I don't have to be ruthless, but I have to say, hey, listen, you missed a lot of, I can't, just to put it in layman's terms, notes. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was your nerves or maybe it was something. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying maybe, you know, this is tough and maybe this will give you a thicker skin to try again. And I'm not saying you should give up. But when I'm honest like that, people say it's brutal. People say it's, but I'm only honest and I want to be positive. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's as mean or as harsh as he was.
Who do you think out of all the talent you've seen on that show, who is your number one pick for the most talented person that's ever been on that show?
Again, like A Sense of Humor, I think that's subjective. You know, I just saw on this season, on season 18, I saw the best magician I've ever seen in my life. And for the life of me, I can't figure out what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And he's using technology and you'd love it. I'll show you it after. And the best dancers I've ever seen. And last year we had the best dancers that I've ever seen. And they ended up working with Beyonce. But one of my favorite moments was a 12-year-old girl by the name of Courtney Hadwin, who came on, who was incredibly shy and didn't know what to do. You're not allowed to play her, right?
Play what?
Her.
I hear can
her.
Do whatever we want.
You want
to? We're on Rumble. We can do whatever.
Do you know how
want.
To put her up?
We don't so care we can, about being demonetized. We don't care about the money.
Do we know how to put her up so you guys can watch this?
If you guys want to do that, great. We can also add it after.
Yeah, we can add it after.
We'll see if it comes up.
Let me know.
I'll tell you why, because this little girl, this is what I love. I love when I'm surprised. So they told me that there's a little girl from England that was coming on the show, and she's 12 years old and she's really nervous. She was supposed to come on next. I was the one that was going, you know, each of us, we take turns saying, hey, what's your name? Where are you from? What are you going to do? Tell me a little bit about yourself. And this was supposed to be mine. And they go, Howie, we're not going to do yours next because she's throwing up backstage. She's so nervous.
No way.
And then they came back out and they go, okay, she's going to come out, but we'll give it to Mel B because Mel is from England. And maybe if she hears somebody that's from her country, she'll be a lot more comfortable. So we were already set up for this person that was going to be this really delicate little, you know, child. And are you even close to having it?
Yeah.
Close. So just watch this. If you think this delicate little child who just threw up, watch her. Watch. This is one of the most surprising moments I've had to date. She already started. Back it up. Back it up because I want to hear.
She looks petrified.
Yeah. Back it up. So when they're talking to her, so they can hear her and we can't hear her. I can't hear her. So she's 12 years old. You'll see how she's incredibly socially awkward. And it's one of my favorite moments.
Mm-hmm. Did she after that have any success or was it short lived or what?
I think she's in school. I think she will have success. Yeah. I don't think it's taken off from there. In this moment, she had incredible success.
Right.
In this moment. Are you able to get it?
Seconds.
2 seconds.
Yeah.
2 seconds.
2 seconds. How
old are you? We hear.
Yeah, we can hear. 30. It doesn't matter. Even if we can't see.
What's your favorite subject in school?
Music.
What kind of music?
She does look nervous.
I don't know.
Poor girl.
Oh, she is.
I'm guessing you're going to be singing for us.
Yeah.
Who are the other
co-hosts? Don't be nervous. I know this is
Mel B, you know, Scary Spice.
Come on.
But you're here for a reason.
Simon and Heidi.
Go for it and good luck.
Thank you.
And to be in front of the icons like this is
and
gotta
be her first
wild.
Time in America.
Who's that guy in the backstage?
Her dad.
Oh, amazing.
Watch this. You won't believe this.
She sounds great.
Less is more.
All right, TikTok answer. No.
Oh, wow. Didn't expect that at all.
Father's a when I answer for it all, you got to call back for more. Oh, I see coming down the
hill. Unreal.
Little thing, my life to him, because my heart to him will now get around.
What a superstar.
I mean, she is a little like, it's a lot of body movement. That's a lot of body movement. You know, but I don't, that's, yeah, wow.
Okay.
Amazing.
So is that one of the, that's one of your favorite performances you've ever seen?
Yeah, because it just came out of nowhere. I wasn't expecting it. I ended up giving her a golden buzzer. She's like, I'm a huge
What is a golden buzzer?
She goes right to the final. She came in about third, but she ended up doing it. I can't remember. She performed with another big group, but she was like Janis Joplin. It just so happens that that kind of music at that time, 6 years ago, was not. So she, but now she has a new album out. Her name's Courtney Hadwin. You could follow her on TikTok and on YouTube. She's amazing. She's about 18, 19. And then I had another girl, Grace Vanderwaal, who was also a songwriter. Do you know who she is?
I've heard the name.
Sounds familiar. She became like a supermodel and she's just amazing now. But I also, when she was 12, I like these kids that kind of surprise me.
Do you ever have them reach out to you after, Howie?
Online, you know, but I don't really know.
Who was your biggest miss that you had on the show? Everyone said no, and then they become a superstar later on.
That's happened to a lot of, listen, if you go down Vegas, if you go down the strip, everybody that's got their own show has been part of America's Got Talent, from Terry Fader to the Jabberwockies, who didn't win our show, the Jabberwockies, who have their own show there, to Piff the Magic Dragon and Tape Face. But we've had a lot of big star, a lot of people who have ended up with their own show in Las Vegas or part of the AGT show that have gone on to do amazing things. It's hard off the top of my head to remember who they are, but they do. And this is another thing that is amazing to me. With you young people today, big stars are incredibly siloed. You know, there's 100%. Anybody that can play an arena. And I know this in comedy now, but when I was young, when I was in the 70s, when somebody was big enough to play an arena, even if I didn't want to go, I knew who they were. But now with the advent of social media and podcasts and YouTube, somebody could be selling 15,000 tickets. You know, these people like Shane Gillis and Ari Shaffir and Mark Norman and all these, and Bert Kreischer's, and you don't have to know them and you don't have to hear them. And even in music, when everybody used to listen to top 40 radio, you knew what it was. But now people are just downloading. If you want to be the, you know, it could be just somebody from TikTok that can just blow up. And if you're not on TikTok, then you don't know what that song is. People like Lil Nas came out of TikTok, you know?
I mean, it's a different world now. It's so fucking different.
It really is.
So Howie, before we wrap this up, because this has been amazing, I actually think that Deal or No Deal, my favorite show of all time, America's Got Talent, best host maybe probably ever to fucking live.
Thank you.
What is, what would you say is the one piece of advice to somebody, and it's a different world now, that wants to kind of be Howie Mandel? At the end of the day, they want to look up to you. They want to do the same kind of thing that you did. Stand up comedy, turn it into give. What's the best advice you can give somebody?
Never say no and just do it. It's Nike's advice. And that's what I've done. You know, I nothing I have done, including this podcast today with you, is anything that I ever set out to do. It's just, I believe that every person every day has a door of opportunity open to them, you know, and whether it's if you have a funny idea and you want to record yourself on your phone and put it up on every fucking platform, or somebody calls you out of the blue and says, come on, we'll talk, we'll record it. I don't know what it's going to be, or whether, you know, my philosophy is it's really easy to say no. It is so easy to say no. We overthink everything. And no is N-O, which are the first two letters in nothing. Nothing good will happen with a no. But if you just, you know, you can end up making, and I still do, I'll make mistakes. I could possibly get canceled. I could find, and if I do get canceled, I'll find another way to scratch my way to whatever. You've gone through a lot of shit in your life. You got to keep saying yes, and you got to keep doing it, and you can't overthink it. If you want to do something today, if you feel like in the moment you want to be a comedian and you have a funny idea, record it, post it. And keep doing it. And don't get discouraged. Don't let outside, I guess because I was so insular in my own mind and because I didn't have friends, I've never done anything for other people. I do it to entertain myself. And I do it because it sounds like fun to me. And without thinking, I'm not goal-oriented. I've hit some goals, but I think if you're goal-oriented, that's very negative. Because if you think, here's what I want to do and here's where I want to be, then you're just really verifying the fact that you're not there. You know, if you can identify a goal, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to have. This is what you're, that's what you just made a list of everything you're not doing today, everything you don't have today. But if you just want to do something goofy, if you just want to take a step, if you just want to make somebody laugh, if you just want to make yourself laugh, if you just want to record, don't find any reason not to do it. Cause most people will go through life. And I'm telling you, as a really old guy, you could fill yourself with shoulda, woulda, coulda, never shoulda, woulda, coulda, just do it. Mm-hmm. And that's my advice.
And then one thing that you haven't accomplished yet that you want to accomplish.
I don't know. You know, I really live in the now. I really do live in the now. I can't think of the future because I'm so mentally disturbed. I really am. If I think of what I didn't do or I want to do or that I haven't done, you know, I didn't know I wanted to be a comedian. I didn't know I wanted to be a Saturday morning voice. I didn't know I wanted to be a game show host. I didn't know I wanted to be a podcaster. I didn't know. I don't know. So I just, all I want from the future is the ability to do what I'm doing today. And if health doesn't get in the way or opportunities don't get in the way, then I just want to keep doing this. I feel like each and every day I'm at the pinnacle of whatever it is I'm doing.
Love that. I love that. Howie, you're the absolute man. You're a really good dude, man. We really, really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
This is a lot of fun. I think that on behalf of all of us, we thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, brother.